Welcome to the Uncovered Podcast, where we take a deeper look into the ideas, companies, and entrepreneurs that are creating the future and uncover the stories you haven't heard. Uncovered is presented by PJC, an early stage venture capital firm committed to supporting the next generation of entrepreneurs.
We're back with another episode of the Uncovered Podcast. I'm here with my co-hosts, Rob May and David Martirano. And we have Ty Harris on the show today, who is the CEO of Openly. How are you doing today, Ty?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming in. What we'd love to do is dive into your background. You were at Liberty Mutual for some time. And, you know, what was the, you know, give us a background on Openly and why you started it and kind of what you're up to.
Yeah, no, thanks. So, yeah, you're right. I came up to Boston years ago to go to grad school at MIT. I went from there to Liberty Mutual, which, of course, is a huge insurance company based here. You know, when I went in, I was a beginning actuary, and that was kind of the way in the door for quantitative people. So that's how I got my start. I spent about 12 years at Liberty doing, at first, really quantitative things, building, you know, models and pricing things. By the end of my time there, I was a very senior executive, so I was the chief product and underwriting officer for their personal lines of business globally. And, you know, that was an amazing job. And a couple years ago, roughly the same month that my wife and I had our first child, as luck would have it, I actually decided to take the jump and start Openly. And I wasn't running away. Liberty is a great company. I wasn't running away from anything, but founding Openly. The best I can say from, you know, about my personal motivation, I really enjoyed the days when I was building new things in my job, and I less enjoyed the days when I was defending old things, and I wanted to do a job where it was more like 100% building new things.
Ty, how much was the decision to do Openly driven by the desire to start a company, and so you knew insurance and went into that, and how much of it was in your day job you just saw, like, wow, here's this need that isn't being met?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the right answer is that, of course, I saw this need that wasn't being met. The truth is I saw about 20 needs that weren't being met, as I'm sure most people in a big, you know, historical industry probably see, and not everyone takes a leap. So I think most things that happen in people's lives are ultimately come down to something, you know, personal or something, you know, driven by their what they want out of their lives. And so for me, it really was that motivation to start and to spend my time building things. And I literally made a list of about 10 big problems in insurance. And I said, I could go after any one of these. And I feel like it could be a business. And Openly is the one that rose to the top for a number of reasons. But it was more so that desire to start something.
Great. What came up with the name of Openly?
Yeah. So, you know, these days, of course, if you look up Openly, if you Google Openly, well, first you'll see our company, which is great. Right below that, you'll see the definition of Openly, which is essentially, you know, without deception or prevarication, especially where those things are expected. And insurance is a place where there's a lot of positive intentions, but I do think some people expect deception in insurance for, you know, some deserved and some undeserved reasons. And Openly really is trying in many ways, and I think proving to be the opposite. So everything about our company, we put our policy contracts that customers see right out there on our public webpage. You know, very few other carriers do that. We work explicitly through, and I'll, you know, we can talk more about what we do. We work explicitly through independent insurance agents who are openly comparing prices and products for their customers instead of like cramming one carrier's product down their throat. So it really is in the spirit of our company. There is a nature of it, you know, when you get kind of nerdy about it, there's an aspect of Openly, which is that we see ourselves ultimately really as a platform that is connecting consumers who need insurance with providers of capital for insurance, with reinsurers and insurance companies in the back end. And we do so through what we consider a pretty open platform. But that's more of kind of the technical thinking there.
So we call this the Undercover Podcast because we always want to focus on things that are undercovered. And I find it really interesting because there aren't a lot of insurance startups. And I think many of our listeners who have been entrepreneurs or investors, they know how to look at like software startups or sort of direct-to-consumer product startups. It's like you either make a thing and then sell it, or you write some software and then sell it. Like, what do you have to do to start an insurance company? Like, there's a bunch of laws and shit like that, right?
Oh, it is. tell me about it. It is, I mean, as you all know, that one of the most dangerous things about starting a company is if you can't learn quickly, if you don't get feedback that, hey, you're on the right or wrong path. And that's the hardest thing about an insurance company is there are all kinds of regulations and other barriers to entry that preclude you from getting immediate customer feedback. We were literally launched in market this past October of 2019. That was 2 years after we founded the company. We'd raised a bunch of money by then. We had to line up reinsurance. We had to line up what's known in the industry affectionately as a fronting company, which is basically, it sounds below board, but it's perfectly above board, but it's basically like a company of record on whose behalf you are technically writing the insurance. And then we had to build the entire operational stack of an insurance company. You can't build an insurance company that's just an MVP and is like the pricing. You need also, you know, claims and service and billing and the whole. So it was a huge build. There are both regulatory, but also just capital obstacles and technological, kind of obstacles to doing it as well. But we're amazingly proud to have done it. I'll just say that we built much of this from whole cloth, and it was amazing when we had real KPIs. You know, we went through Techstars, and every day we'd show up, and our classmates would have their KPIs from the latest week, and we'd show up with, oh, still trying to get that reinsurance company to work with us, and that wasn't fun. But it's amazing to be there now.
So on that topic, why don't you talk a little bit about your decision to go to Techstars and versus other incubators? And the second part of that question is maybe talk a little bit about, to Rob's point about Uncovered, something that you didn't experience part of Techstars you didn't expect, or something you can guess insights as other entrepreneurs thinking about going to a Techstars and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, look, Techstars, there's obviously a bunch of different incubators out there with different styles. Techstars was amazing for us. If you're not familiar, Techstars takes what I would call a very personalized small boutique approach, as opposed to, bringing in like 1,000 companies and then not knowing them well. Techstars, brings in about 10 companies. We went through the Boston program. There were 10 companies in our class. And it's extremely intensive for that reason. It's a 3-month program. And, the managing director of the program that we went through, still, we meet with him all the time. And he's one of our greatest advisors, way beyond any financial contribution. And even beyond the sort of name stuff that you get through, meeting investors, the advice that we got through Techstars was just amazing. The thing that's, I guess, surprising was one of the things that surprised me was just the sacrifices that the other companies in the program were going through. I mean, there were companies where people, had families and small children, and the CEO's off to, China for 6 weeks to work with a manufacturer there, or, all kinds of stories like that. It was just inspiring in a way and humbling in a way to see what these other founders were putting into their companies.
So Ty, is this the first company that you've started throughout your entire career?
It is. I'm a man of many hobbies. So, even when I was in a big corporate life, I had some, this is certainly the first like real company that I've started. And it's quite a transition. It's definitely the right move for me, but I would want to have a long, hard talk with anybody else who's thinking about making the transition from a big high level corporate job for sure.
So talk to us about that transition. So as you jumped out of Liberty Mutual to start Openly, what are some of the things that, that you took with you, and how do you think about, spinning out of a large company to start a startup? And, how do you feel like your network has helped you as you've built Openly? You've obviously, you kind of rose through the ranks at Liberty, and you probably left with a really strong network, I'm sure. And so how have you leveraged that, and what are some things that, you could shed some light on to our listeners?
Yeah, well, my main thought would be if it's been this hard for me, then I can't even imagine how hard it is when you don't have that kind of network to begin. The pros certainly are that, compared with, people coming straight out of college, you have thought about building a talented team before, and you've thought about how to build an organization, how to give people ownership of things, and you've thought about measuring things, you've been held accountable, and then, of course, the relationship. So in insurance, this is all about knowing reinsurers and knowing the credit company, the companies that provide the credit scores, and knowing all the vendors, and knowing, just the baseline intuition of, oh, if we're selling this many policies, that probably means we're underpriced. And, so that stuff helps amazingly, and the credibility. But the flip side, it is amazingly humbling. For me, I enjoy being humbled. I've, when I was in grad school, I became a competitive ballroom dancer. I practiced 15 hours a week. Now I was never going to be like a world champion ballroom dancer, but it was fun for me because I like building from nothing.
That alone is worth.
There we go.
I mean, that is, talk about uncovering founders in Boston. I mean, yeah, that's a great
stat. Worth the whole podcast.
Yeah. I mean, that was our 25 minutes or more than, I mean, that was amazing.
I'm going to just start my cha-cha here. No, but you know, I was at MIT and it's, you know, MIT is good at the kind of niche sports, right? Like pistol shooting and ballroom dancing. But anyway, point being that like, I think I enjoy that kind of tearing something down to the ground and really starting from scratch and making myself excellent at it. But that is what you have to do. You're used to, you know, the perks, the salary, the internal respect, the availability of resources that comes from a big company. And suddenly you're out there pitching to people who mostly don't necessarily listen to you, who don't, recognize whatever you thought you might deserve as recognition in this space. It doesn't really matter to them, which is fair, you know. And finally, you're held accountable to absolute results. It's not like, oh, you made a good PowerPoint, we think you're doing pretty well. I mean, I'm not, but just any big company is going to fall prey a little bit to that. Whereas the market just, it may lie, but like you are accountable to whatever it's saying directly, as opposed to what you, it's not the inputs you put into it. I mean, that matters, but it's ultimately the outputs that you get out of the market that matter.
Yeah. So you mentioned the respect you get at a big company. I think a lot of people want to come into entrepreneurship because they feel like, oh, entrepreneurs are so well respected. But you know, the truth is you're not until you're successful, really, right? and I'm curious what that transition was like for you and how you, if being an entrepreneur and being a CEO was what you expected, or where was it most different?
Yeah. I mean, this will sound cliched, so I apologize, but it just, nothing could be truer than that. I came into this thinking, oh, everyone says that like persistence and, you know, banging your head against the wall 300 times, so the 301st time, and it's like a door or something. You hear that, but you don't understand how true that is until you do it, right? I mean, you know, a month after I left this great corporate job, had this business plan, went up to some, you know, conference on InsurTech and started pitching to people, and they just, we didn't have our, you know, everything together as well as we should have, but the need to talk to 100 people for everyone who's going to be interested in the early days is just, it would have been so easy so many times in our company. We've had a relatively easy path as a company. I mean, we got into Techstars and we had great investors there, but still there's probably 100 times when we could have easily quit. And you can't express that to someone until they've done it, I'd say.
So on the topic of Boston, talk a little bit about building in Boston and what do you think Boston's superpower is?
Yeah, it's been amazing for us building in Boston. I think the, very selfishly, there's actually a great insurance ecosystem in Boston. Besides obviously the amazing tech ecosystem, we have heavily leveraged the insurance ecosystem. You don't think about it, but you know, there's a number of really great insurance companies around here and we're actually working with them either via, sometimes their employees who have chosen to join us, sometimes as partners, where they're backing us in some way or investing in us or whatnot. I wouldn't consider that a universal superpower, but it's a really neat place to build an insurance company. It's also, I'll be careful. I've really had wonderful just conversations and relationships with investors here, especially in the sort of fintech space. It feels like, I don't know, I would have to think about it if I was building something which I'll call, and that was a little more purely new market consumer. I don't know, is it? But like certainly for what we're doing, having Boston and the proximity to New York and everything, it's just an amazing place to be building stuff.
So you have a different kind of startup, like we mentioned before, being an insurance rather than, say, software or a direct-to-consumer product. What's been the impact on hiring? Is it harder to hire, do you think? Or, are you hiring a lot of people out of the insurance industry? Are they afraid to leave big companies? Like, what's that like as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so we're really half and half. To be good at insure tech, you have to actually have a lot of really good insurance people and some really good technology people. And we brought in, on the technology side, folks who, except for one, had zero experience in insurance. And that's a very good decision. Not that there's not good insurance people, but what we found is that there's an amazing group of technologists out there who are interested in going after a huge industry like insurance. They're not really quite sure how to. When you talk to them and say, hey, here's what we're building and here's why home insurance today is not amazing. You can relate to that, right? And here's what we're doing. We're making it so that with three questions, you can get a bindable rate on $1 million house. Wow, that sounds challenging. There's machine learning in that. And there's, you know, production connections to 1 million different providers of data. And there's, oh, by the way, there's this whole policy administration system. There's a beautiful user interface that agents have to use. So, and by the way, we're building it in Go, not in, you know, some language from 3,000 years ago. So that is, we've had amazing luck there. Now, we are a partially remote team. We've sort of built a some presence in Boston, some in Ann Arbor, and then some truly remote. So we're open to different ways for people to work.
So has that helped you a lot in terms of recruiting, in terms of other markets to have people work remotely? You know, with the generation today of the millennials, a lot of people are working remotely. It's become a power ally for a lot of companies. And we have a lot of portfolio companies at PJC that you know, have remote workers because it's been a tough market to hire in general. Are there any specific reasons why you picked those markets specifically?
You know, we started out, I would love to say there was a grand design. We actually started out by chance just saying, look, to get the kind of talent that we want, we're going to make a choice that we want the best talent and we're going to be willing to hire that sort of wherever it may lay. Now, by chance, a couple of our really strong early employees were based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we said, hey, actually, they have some interest in not, you know, necessarily working from home. They'd rather work from an office in Ann Arbor. And we said, hey, let's try that. And that's worked out really well. So they do kind of the partial, some days they're fully remote, some days they come into an office and can collaborate. And that's worked very well. But it wasn't that we had a consulting firm do a two-year study on locations. We kind of chanced into that.
Very cool. And how many people are openly now, and how has the job of startup CEO changed as the size of the company's changed?
Yeah, we're 16 people. Well, in the early days when it was two of us, it was mostly, obviously I was literally building things. So Matt was building the production technology, and I was building sort of the insurance side, the policies and the rating models. And we were both spending a lot of our time knocking on doors of, you know, investors or insurers, reinsurers, et cetera. There's the obvious transition to, needing to empower people. I think one of the toughest things compared with a big established company is figuring out the right moment with each function or each task or however you want to think about it to really empower somebody and which places you feel like, well, this still needs like, you know, my vision as the founder. And, you know, at a big company, you're so infrequently building an entirely new direction to the company or entirely new wing on the company that it doesn't come up as often. It's mostly, oh, I got great people. Let's just empower them to do these things. But there are those moments in startup life when you as the founder do need to be involved and kind of more hands-on setting the direction. And that's been the hardest transition coming from I used to manage 800 people at Liberty. And, so managing 16, I still feel small. It's like, wow, I really got to, you know, nose into some of these things or I still got to roll up my sleeves.
Yeah. So we call this the Undercovered podcast, and we like to ask everybody, what's your undercover idea that people have not, maybe something that you didn't expect or that you wish somebody had told you or that you would give as a piece of advice to founders of like, hey, if you're going to go start a company, here's the thing people don't tell you that it's like that you need to understand. What's your sort of secret piece of advice?
This will be, I don't know if this is universally applicable, but you know, for me personally, I mentioned when I left my big corporate job was like the same month that we had our first kid. We've had my wife and I have had a second child, and building she actually runs a startup as well, her own startup. I run my startup. We have two kids. So that combined with the fact that things just, maybe it's our example, but things just take longer than you think. So you always think, oh, 6 months from now, this will have either gone into the ground or it'll be like, you know, Facebook. Yeah, but that's just, it doesn't seem like that's the case. It's like 6 months from now, we're going along and we got some bites. But, and I think if you treat it as, you know, on the one hand, time is, you know, being fast is your only real advantage as a startup, and that's true, but you can't make that have you live your life as if the next 2 weeks are the only 2 weeks I have left in my life, because you'll ignore all the personal relationships in your life. And then before you know it, you'll wake up and 2 years has gone by. And, you know, so you really do have to pace yourself in some macro sense when it comes to relationships outside of your business.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on the show today, Ty. And I hope those of you listening will check out all the other podcasts for season one. And if you're building a very innovative tech company, we'd love for you to give us a call at PJC. We'd love to take a look. If there's guests you would like us to have on the program or questions you would like us to ask future guests, please send those to podcast@pjc.vc. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Uncovered Podcast. To learn more about PJC and the Uncovered Podcast, visit us at www.pjc.vc or email us at podcast@pjc.vc.